The devil really is in these details. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
As always, Barry, it's great to be with you here with folks out in WLRY land and also in podcast land. A lot of the folks out there do listen to us on podcast, and we say thank you for welcoming us into your home.
Yes, well, Chuck, we have really not dealt with this issue that we're going to talk about today in the depth or detail that we should because, well, honestly, Chuck, and I'll just be confessional to you, I'm not really excited about this. And what I'm talking about is the 40th anniversary of the Roe versus Wade decision. I'm not excited about it because I know that for the reason why we have tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of otherwise great pro-life stalwarts going out to Washington, D.C. for congressional breakfasts and speaking engagements and standing in the mall and marching and things of that nature is because we're buying into a lie. And that lie is that Roe versus Wade, the Supreme Court decision in 1973 that supposedly legalized abortion on demand, is in fact the law of the land. In other words, it is, as Article 6 of the Constitution would say, it's not this Constitution, nor is it the laws of the United States made in pursuant thereof, and nor is it any treaties made under the authority of the United States. So I'm having trouble, Chuck, figuring out how we got from the plain words of Article 6 of the Constitution explains what the law of the land is to a, I think it was a 5-4 decision or maybe it was a 6-3 decision in Roe versus Wade in 1973, and that all of a sudden becomes the law of the land. I didn't realize that the courts, number one, could make law, and number two, that their decision affected any more than the two parties at interest in the case.
Well, that's exactly the truth. The problem is, Barry, nobody's buying into it now. That we have been so brainwashed about what the Constitution actually says that we've gone over to this case law approach in law, and everybody says that once the case is made in a case law approach, that covers all the other cases that should come before the court. Well, that's not the way the court was designed to work. The court was designed to work on the basis of law as passed by a legislative body. Now, a court could say, we don't think this is constitutional and therefore we're not going to enforce it. But the fact is, Norma McCorvey, who was Jane Roe, actually had no standing to bring her case before the Supreme Court.
No.
And the reason she had no standing was this was not a federal case. It was a state case.
Right. She was suing the Wade in question in Roe versus Wade was the attorney general of the state of Texas.
Exactly. The fact that the court took it meant that they were doing something that was outside their constitutional prerogative. Now, the Congress had never taken up the idea, or I think some people had entered bills to make abortion legal in the past, and they were basically, everybody said, no, this is not a constitutional issue. So what they did was they refused to act legally on it. They said that's a state function. It's not in Article 1, Section 8. So the Congress decided not to deal with it because of the fact that it's not one of the enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8. That's back when Congress actually cared about the enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8. And as we pointed out last week in our show, there are a heck of a lot of congressmen who have no idea what the Constitution says. And when they can read it, they actually don't understand it very well. We have people who've taken our Institute on the Constitution class, of which we're forming two new classes right now, one in Mount Vernon, Ohio, and one in Marengo, Ohio, to run starting the 1st of March. And we invite you to take these classes because we know that once we teach them, the people that we have just taught usually know much more than their congressman, than their senator, than the president of the United States, than most Supreme Court justices, most judges, most city council members, and most, in name a government level, our students know more than those people do about the Constitution. So activists said, okay, we now have an activist court. The Warren Court was very activist. All the courts have been heavily activist since Franklin D. Roosevelt. These activists, people who know that they can take these cases to the Supreme Court and try to bypass Congress, the normal lawmaking method. the constitutional lawmaking method of having Congress pass it, the president sign it, and then it becoming the law of the land. So what they did was they came up with this cockamamie reasoning that all this stuff, the arguments that are contained in Roe v. Wade are extremely complex, extremely convoluted, and extremely false. And the idea was that, well, we don't know when life begins, and therefore we can set the date arbitrarily. Well, that's a dumb argument, Barry. At that point, if you don't know when it begins, the date you should choose is at the moment of conception, not at arbitrary date here, there, or another place. And the fact is that science has marched on since then, and we do know that life essentially starts at conception. And so all this activist stuff. Now, I can tell you that I believe it was Potter Stewart. One of the arguments that he made in Roe versus Wade was the fact that we had to do something to reduce the growth of population, and therefore abortion was A-okay.
Yes.
Barry, this is extremely radical, a very radical view of social engineering that can be performed by the federal government. The Constitution is pretty clear. There isn't anything that allows them to do any social engineering. And yet here we have this decision in Roe versus Wade that was in part influenced by things like Paul Ehrlich and the population bomb movement. Very dangerous way to think. And yet this man, an associate justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, who wasn't afraid to bring his activist agenda to the court.
And Chuck, the other thing that really causes me quite a bit of concern is how little many of our friends in the pro-life movement grasp this situation, grasp the fact that to go back and try to ask the court to reverse Roe as if that would then become the new law of the land, how much of a pipe dream that really could very well be. Because what if court reverses Roe? They're just going to use some other type of convoluted argument or to say that, well, the states, if they did, they'd be falling in line with the Constitution, which would be a shock and amazement because that'd be one of the first times they've ever done so. But they'd be falling in line with the Constitution to say it's left up to the states to decide whatever they want to do in relation to the life issue. But what we really do, and I think we do a disservice, and I know people are going to say, well, that's sour grapes, or I can't believe you said that. Well, I'm going to say it. And that is the fact that we spend an awful lot of time, resources, and dollars going out to Washington, D.C. as if it's really going to make a major difference. I heard somebody sent me an email the other day, Chuck. It was some quote from John Boehner that I honestly pull it up to do justice to it. I mean, it was that far off the board. And let me see here. I'm going to pull this up right now. And I apologize. I should have had this up just a few minutes ago, but I was having some technical difficulties. But the point is that every year in January during the March for Life, politicians come out and they talk a really, really, really good game about ending abortion and protecting defenseless human life. And that sounds wonderful, but the devil is in the details, Charles, because what usually ends up happening is that gets thrown under the bus wheels while they're dealing with other more important issues like, oh, the fiscal cliff and the budget. Yeah, here is John Boehner, our Speaker of the United States House of Representatives from Ohio, told the pro-lifers this year that ending abortion is, quote, one of our most fundamental goals this year, unquote. Chuck, do you believe it?
No.
I don't either, but you know what? There are a lot of pro-lifers out there who did. And who do. And the point is that every year they come and they get their tickets to the congressional breakfast and they go do this, that, and the other, and they meet up with their other stalwarts. And I'm not dissing them in any way, shape, or form, Charles. And I want to make sure our listeners are clear on that. But we would get closer to ending abortion in this country, legally even, if everybody just did one thing. And that is calculate how much money it costs you, especially our Ohio friends, to hop on a bus or hop in your car or get on an airplane and fly or drive to D.C., go to the march, and you know you're there for more than nobody just drives in and drives back out the same day. So a hotel room and your meals and the time off work, and calculate that out and figure out exactly how much you spend to go out and have this exercise where, as you and I were talking offline, only one media outlet covered the March for Life this year, and that was just so they could set up something in relation to their pro-abortion spin. How much better would it be, and this is what I'm doing, Charles, is to figure out how much money you'd spend, and even if you can't go all the way, let's say, well, maybe I wouldn't spend half that. Well, that's fine. go ahead and reduce it by 50% if you want to, but then turn around and write a check to a local crisis pregnancy center or an abstinence education group or a pro-life organization in your own home state, something where those resources could be used directly. And I think the crisis pregnancy center is the highest on that list, by the way, to really impact the lives of pregnant women and unborn children. And it's when we change hearts, Chuck. It's when we change the thinking of abortion-minded women and abortion-minded men who are pushing for their wives or girlfriends or significant others to terminate the life of the child that they helped to bring into existence. Until we change that, the courts can pronounce all day long, and it's not going to make a great world of difference.
Well, for instance, I know a group that you have worked closely with, Relationships Under Construction, is one of those groups that's attempting to stop abortion or educate people on the reality that things that get forgotten in schools, and that is that sex before marriage leads to pregnancy before marriage, and that leads to a lot of abortions. So that's one of the educational groups. There's all kinds of crisis pregnancy centers that need help. And so instead, we've got people off marching on Washington, D.C. in hopes of gaining some publicity. And Barry, I have to laugh. I'm looking very ironically. The only major network, CBS, NBC, ABC, that covered the March for Life, in which probably it looks like numbers between 450 and 750,000 showed up somewhere in there. One network reported it. It was NBC. And as near as I can tell, some of them ignored it. For instance, NBC carried it, gave it a little short shrift and said thousands showed up. Thousands. Not hundreds of thousands. If it had been anything else, there would have been hundreds of thousands if it had been something they were for. ABC and CBS both covered on Saturday night a quote-unquote pro-gun control rally that nearly 1,000 people showed up to.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So if you're one of the favored groups, you get coverage. If you're in a group that the news media would like to go away and not have to be dealt with, especially under the current administration, you just get ignored. It doesn't matter how many people showed up in Washington, D.C., Barry. If you get 500,000 people to show up, you should be getting coverage. But the Park Service has stopped counting because they got so much nonsense over the way they counted different liberal groups versus how they counted conservative groups who were in the mall. And the fact is that they purposefully undercounted conservative groups, especially the March for Life, and purposefully overcounted liberal groups who showed up and rallied in the mall. So they just stopped doing it because
it's not surprising.
But the networks just simply are ignoring it. And you can go out there and march and protest and do all the stuff, and if it doesn't get carried on network TV, it doesn't gin up any kind of emotional response. Therefore, it's a waste of time and money.
Majorly. Now, let's think about this carefully, if we could, ladies and gentlemen. Let's be conservative. Estimates are between 400 and 750,000 people were there. Let's say 500,000. We'll be fairly conservative. We'll err on the low end. But 500,000 people showed up. Now, Chuck, knowing that probably a good portion of those people might have been from areas that were close to D.C., and again, if you think about it, in the upper Atlantic states and in the New England states, the pro-life, pro-abortion percentages are pretty skewed the wrong way. So a lot of those folks are coming from the Midwest, and I know a lot from Ohio. What would you say the average cost per person would have been to travel out there to do the thing, you know, Saturday, the dinners and Sunday and everything else, and then coming back? And be conservative.
My guess, $500 to $750.
Okay, well, let's say $500. I'm going to even cut it there. I'm going to say $400 a person, okay? I'm just going to say that they're extremely frugal. $400 a person to do this trip. Well, on an average, with 500,000 people?
Yeah, it's a lot of bucks.
That's $200 million.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, think about this. $200 million that could have been donated to crisis pregnancy centers in those states. $200 million that isn't going to get them one inch closer to a political solution, because people like John Boehner are going to go out for their moment in the sun in front of the cameras, say that it's their fundamental goal, but then somehow not be able to kick that field goal when time comes. Wind wasn't right. Sun was in our eyes. Placeholder didn't hold the ball right. We just couldn't get it done. We're so sorry. Hey, let's try again next year. Come on back out here and we'll tell you again how much we're going to do.
Yeah.
Chuck, Lucy's it makes me want to cry to understand that for 40 years, if we're doing the same thing we've always done in the same way we always do it and we're expecting a different result, what does that make us?
Insane.
We've got to get, you know what Tip O'Neill was famous for saying, the old House Speaker, that all politics is local. Well, all yep. political change is local, too. And if you can't get more local than going and helping a crisis pregnancy center who are encouraging women and changing their thoughts and their hearts on the life that is in them and why it is precious and why it needs to be defended and celebrated and brought into this world and nurtured and protected and allowed to grow. We want to spend $200 million for a PR campaign. We're wasting our money.
And with that, we're out of time. And boy, we're going to hear about this, I guarantee it.
That's okay. I've got thick skin. Bring it on.
We've got more on this subject tomorrow, so join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.